Say, you mind if I play you a little something real quick?
I don't know. The last time you went on an impulse, you embarrassed the shit out of me.
Look, this'll be easy. I promise. Watch.
Okay, if you're a black woman of a certain age, then you already know. That was Lorenz Tate as Darius Lovehall, kicking it to Nia Long's character, Nina Mosley, in 1997's Love Jones. Now, a lot of us have been revisiting Love Jones in recent weeks, thanks to its release on Netflix this month. Now, the film was an artistic intervention in the 1990s, a hard departure from the Boys in the Hood, New Jack City version of black urban life. It offered us a wholly artistic rendering of African-American life and love in Chicago, complete with stepper sets, spoken word, and philosophical debates at house parties. But the most important part of Love Jones? The music.
Who am I? It's not important. But they call me brother to the night. And right now, I'm the blues in your left thigh. Trying to become the funk in your right.
From Charlie Parker to Dion Ferris, Lauryn Hill to the Lincoln Center Orchestra, woo, child! It is the music that tells this story. And storytelling is what black music does. And it so happens that June is Black Music Month, an opportunity to read those stories laid down in the tracks of black artists, both past and present.
How many of you know what month this is? Somebody said June. Right on. This is Black Music Month.
Yeah, right on, Mr. President. That's President Jimmy Carter in 1979 declaring June as Black Music Month. And for decades, black musicians, producers, songwriters, and others have shaped the musical landscape of this country and the globe. From maps to the Underground Railroad hidden in the lyrics of freedom songs. The pain baked into the blues.
I went to the crossroads, fell down on my knees.
The necessity of improvisation and collaboration, written by jazz. The struggle of the streets, narrated by hip hop. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, in for Tanzina Vega, and we start today with celebration and discussion of Black Music Month here on The Takeaway. And for more on this, we're joined by Nabil Ayers, writer and general manager of the record label 4AD. Nabil, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And also with us is Mark Anthony Neal, the James B. Duke Distinguished Professor of African and African American Studies at Duke University and host of the podcast Left of Black. Mark, it is so great to have you with us.
What's up, Melissa? How you doing?
Oh, it's so good to talk with you. Mark, I am going to start with you. I want to start with the origins of Black Music Month. Where did this come from?
It is Kenny Gamble. It is Deanna Williams, who's still on radio in Philadelphia, and it's Ed Wright, wanting to find a moment to take advantage of the popularity of black music, taking signals from what the country music industry had been doing. They approached President Carter, you know, can we get some sort of acknowledgement? And we heard his great words in the beginning as they all sat there on the White House lawn, having a kind of soul food picnic, if you will, listening to soul music. And, you know, for someone like Kenny Gamble and, you know, who's the founder of Philadelphia International Records with Leon Huff, it was an opportunity not only to talk about the popularity of black music, but really to double down on the idea of the black music industry as an important economic cog to black Americans in America generally, and to acknowledge its broader history of the impact of black music.
So I love that sort of place that you began with us. And I have to say, when I watched that video with President Carter, it was so high 70s. It was really fascinating to watch. But Nabil, I want to come to you because part of how we entered into this conversation, you know, on the team and wanting to talk about this today was this piece that you did for Pitch Fork, really asking what Black Music Month means now. So in talking with artists for Pitchfork, what did you find that Black Music Month means now?
It was a really interesting project because I went into it, you know, my background is that I was an intern at a record company a long time ago, and then I worked in and later owned a record store. And, you know, in the 90s and 2000s, Black Music Month really existed largely in record stores because that was where people bought music. That was really the only place. So I was very familiar with it. And now I work for a record company and I notice it every year. And I just kind of assumed that everyone knew it. But when I saw every year it's a presidential proclamation that Black Music Month exists and is celebrated, which is pretty incredible. And that started with Bill Clinton, I believe, in 2000. But when Donald Trump tweeted it last year in 2020, I was just so surprised to see that that was still a thing and that he was doing it. I mean, it's online. There's a very long letter from him that, you know, I doubt he actually wrote or even read, but it's celebrating, calling out certain artists, talking about how important Black music is in America. And so that made me really think about it and get into it. And my plan was to talk to, you know, a younger generation of artists and newer artists and artists of all ages and kind of learn what their thoughts are on Black Music Month 42 years in. But what I found is that, and this isn't true across the board, but a lot of the people I talked to, especially the younger people, just weren't familiar with it. And, you know, Deanna Williams, who I spoke to, it was clear to say that for every artist I talked to that wasn't familiar, there are many who are. And I know that's true, but it was interesting talking to these people who weren't familiar. So the piece's focus really kind of shifted to all the interesting things I learned about that artists are doing that are in the same spirit of sort of not only mobilizing the economics, but just talking about the sort of broader sense of what Black music is and getting it out there, whether or not it's officially associated with Black Music Month.
All right, so I want to go to exactly that idea. Mark, let me come back to you for a second. What is Black music?
How much time do we
have? I'm glad that you laughed. That's Mark and I know each other going back, so.
I think most people generally think of it in terms of music that's produced by Black people that's produced in what we recognize as Black musical idioms. But of course, that's complicated, right? Because Black genius is spread out in so many different genres of music. And in many cases, genres of music are people that aren't aware of, right? So we just don't know about the Black imprint, for instance, on classical music, the same way that we understand that imprint in jazz or blues and R&B and things of that nature. And then it gets a little, you know, interesting when you might have, for instance, white artists who happen to be very good at performing Black music, right, in Black idioms in ways that, you know, I think about Boz Scaggs as being a great example of this, right? There are people who might know just right now when I tell them that Boz Scaggs is white and didn't know so because he sounds as though he makes Black music.
So, okay. Let's pause here for a second because, Nabil, one of the other pieces that I found interesting in the conversations you were having with artists now is exactly kind of that point that on the one hand, there are the history that I told, sort of the freedom songs, gospel, you know, blues, jazz, we recognize those. But you were talking with artists who were in other spaces who wanted to also lay claim to that as part of the Black music tradition.
Right. I mean, you know, one of the really interesting conversations I had of many was with Angel Bot DeWeed, who's a clarinetist and composer who lives in Chicago. And right, I was on a Zoom with her and, you know, sort of to illustrate that point, she told me that she'd just been on a Zoom with 12 Black bassoonists.
And yes, 12 Black bassoonists.
Just blew my
mind.
I want
a podcast called 12 Black Bassoonists.
I know, right? It's really incredible. And she was, you know, talking a lot about how in the classical world and the composition world, there's a huge Black presence, but most people just aren't aware of it. And likewise, I mean, I learned a lot just talking to people about, of course, electronic music, where Kate Donata just was the first Black person this year to win the Dance Electronic Album Grammy and Song Grammy too, I believe, just kind of incredible. But you know, dance electronic music is a genre that is generally a byproduct of, you know, funk and house and disco and all these more traditionally Black genres. So there's definitely a lot of that happening. Rock music, of course, country music with Mickey Guyton this year. There's it definitely exists.
All right. So, but there's this other sort of maybe the we don't want to call it the dark side, the nefarious side here, Mark, which is not necessarily white artists who are performing what we might traditionally think of as black music and are widely loved and accepted by black folks, whether we know their own racial category or not. But what about the Elvises of the story of black music, those who drew from black music but did not cite black music?
I think that's another reason why Black Music Month is so history. I think of my colleague Guthrie Ranty, who describes it as a Black Music History Month, right? As an opportunity to double down on a broader history. We know from the 1950s, right? There were, you know, more than the Elvises who were involved in what we know as the cover movement, where white artists specifically would record black music and dumb it down, right? White it down, if you will. So everyone knows, you know, Elvis Presley's Hound Dog, but most folks have never heard Big Mama Thornton's original version of Hound Dog, which sounds so dramatically different and dramatically black, you know, as opposed to the Elvis record. There's so many cases, right? You know, folks will say, well, now this is a great time for folks to acknowledge the African-American impact on black music, for folks to get their recognition. But that recognition sometimes comes in the vacuum of the economic realities, that so many people were able to generate so many millions of dollars on black musical labor and black musical talent that black artists never got the opportunity to see. And that was why this was so important for Kenny Gamble and Leon Huff and Philadelphia International Records to make that particular connection between the popularity of black music and the economic role that it plays in black communities.
So, Nabil, let me come to you on that, because one of the folks you talked to said, well, black music is green.
Right. That was the, I think that was the official sort of tagline of the first Black Music Month in 1979, which, you know, was a very overt and obvious statement to, you know, that they were not trying to be subtle about saying that there is a lot of money generated by black artists playing music, and we need to acknowledge that.
And does that green, though, show up in black communities, or is it primarily enriching other folks?
That's a tougher question to answer. I mean, I know, and Mark, you probably know more about this than I do, but I know that part of the Black Music Month, the reason part of it began because they wanted to funnel more of that money back to black businesses, black owned record labels, of course, black record stores. But the is it going there question, I'm not sure I'm qualified to answer.
We heard from a caller who mentions how black music tells a story, and the song she mentions does just that.
This is Valetti Key from New Orleans. Let me tell you, the song that speaks to me the most is Life by KC and JoJo. And when you hear that song, I be thinking about all them brothers that be up in Angola. And so I think that song helps me imagine how they get to that point. You know, the song say, what happened to my master plan? It shouldn't have gone down this way. You know, black male in the family of three been robbed of my destiny. So he already felt the systemicness of racism as a black man. And that led him down a path of life. And he's sitting there wondering, tell me, how did I get life? And if that ain't a story to help you understand where these young brothers be going and headed, I don't know what is.
Listen, let me tell you, just hearing my people speak in our NOLA sound of voice reminds me of how black music infuses even the ways that we speak. And Mark, I want to come to you on this, because I've been missing New Orleans because of COVID-19, a pandemic that disrupted so many things. What did it do to the music industry for black artists over the course of the past year and a half?
The music industry's dirty secret is that artists don't make a whole lot of money on the selling of their actual music. So many other people do. They make their money being on the road by touring. And the one thing that COVID did for black artists over the last year was to really hamper their ability to make a living by being out on the road. The internet became incredibly important. You know, folks who figured out ways to monetize, you know, doing performances in their living room. I love the work that Toby Enwigwe from down in Houston did over the last year in terms of creating a platform to be able to push his music out into the world without having to go on tour. Versus was so incredibly important, not so much for new music, but artists were able to double down on their catalog. I'm sure the Isley Brothers, Earth, Wind & Fire, Patti LaBelle, Gladys Knight, you know, saw incredible increases in the sales of their music, their back catalog, because of Versus, right? But, you know, once things open up again, people can make the money that they can make by being back on the road and connecting with people.
So you're so right about Versus and the ways that, from my perspective, the things that saved my life during quarantine was Club Quarantine and Versus, right? Sort of having Black music to see us through in those moments. But then this point about the green for Black artists. So Nabil, let me ask you about this a bit, because one of the things you lay out in the piece is about the Black artist database and other ways that contemporary Black artists are seeking to support the industry and support one another. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I think this is a pretty incredible story. I mean, to do a little bit of a backstory, there's Bandcamp, which is a great platform on which, you know, any musician, small to huge, can upload their album, you know, receive payment directly. Bandcamp takes a small fee. However, once the pandemic hit and Bandcamp realized so many artists weren't able to tour and make money like usual, they started waiving their fees once a month on a certain Friday each month and calling it Bandcamp Friday. So on those Fridays, they were very heavily publicized and pushed by artists, and artists were receiving, or artists or small labels, 100% of any income that came in that day. So those became a big deal. And right around that time, a woman in London who's a DJ named Nikitha Delanancy kind of realized that even though things were hard for the musicians she knew in London and Europe, that it was harder in America, where there was, you know, no real sort of fallback plan and people were having a hard time paying their rent. And she saw the Bandcamp Fridays as a real way to kind of mobilize support. So she and some other friends got together and just started a simple Google spreadsheet and started a list of Black electronic musicians. I think she said they got about 30 people that they knew and they could think of. And this was 2 days before one of the Bandcamp Fridays in June of 2020, and put that up on some Facebook pages and some groups, went to bed and woke up. They'd asked people to sort of add to it and woke up, and there were 500 names on the list, which was kind of incredible. And by Friday, the next day, there were 1,000. And this was a way for people to literally just put money directly in the pockets of those musicians by buying their music. Bandcamp pays musicians every day via PayPal, so there's no waiting, there's no monthly thing or anything like that. And it turned into a much bigger thing. I think it's at around 3,500 artists and creators and labels right now. And it was under the Instagram handle Black Bandcamp, but now it's called the Black Music Database. And this is completely volunteer run. There was no money behind it. No one was getting paid. These are just people who saw a need and acted. And it's kind of a great example of, you know, what somebody can do today that's in the spirit of Black Music Month.
In so many ways, that feels to me like the very stories of what Black music is at its core. I mean, even beyond the sonic aspects, sort of that notion of the collective, collaborative work that we do with each other, even as we're creating art. But Mark, I have to reveal this. I feel nothing has shows my age more than music taste. Like, I'm definitely that person who now mocks my children about the hip hop they listen to. So help me to think about the stories that are being told in contemporary Black music that maybe an old head like me can still really appreciate.
You know, they're telling the stories of their own lives, right? And in the world that an 18 or 19 year old experience now is very different than the world that we experienced when we were that age. Black music has always been about storytelling, right? Both the storytelling of individual artists who are making music, but also the broader stories of who we are as a community. And you know, the thing that has been ongoing about Black music, if you want to find out what's happening in Black America, listen to the wide genre styles that we define as Black music, and you will hear the story about what's going on. We know that, for instance, that, you know, young artists and young Black folks are dealing with things like addiction to painkillers, because you can't listen to a hip hop song and not hear some reference to Percocet. As just one example of that. And I think very often as older listeners, because I'm with you right there, right? I'm sitting there in the car, my 18-year-old. I'm like, what is this that we're listening to? Right? Can I put on my Billy Preston CD? Right. So right. But you know, they are articulating the world that they're in, and we have to get away from placing judgment on how they describe that world and actually go in and listen to what they're dealing with and what they're feeling at this moment.
Absolutely. Thank you so much to Mark Anthony Neal, the James B. Duke Distinguished Professor of African and African American Studies at Duke University. He's also the host of the podcast Left of Black. And to Nabil Ayers, writer and general manager of the record label 4AD. And check out Nabil's piece in Pitchfork about what Black Music Month means now. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.